Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, October 24th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We'll go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we push through the middle of the week here. Two guests joining me on today's program. The first, Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. We're chatting a couple of NFL games, a trio of college football games here with Brian. Then the second half of today's show, Wes Reynolds will join me at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. We'll chat about the NBA, some early season stuff, some derivative stuff. Then we'll also take a look at the WGC HSBC Champions event over in China. Big golf tournament here that starts tonight, actually. So you want to make sure that you get everything in nice and early. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots and lots of all of that over there at the website. We'll have updated NFL power ratings here tonight or early tomorrow from Danny Borgs. My College Football power ratings were updated earlier on in the week. We've got how to bet pieces for select NBA games on a daily basis. My MLB picks and tips piece. Parker Michaels' NHL picks and tips piece every day. Situational betting articles, soccer previews, NFL, college football, UFC, NASCAR, tennis, you name it, we've got it over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Of course, check out our free pick contest as well, and also our sportsbook reviews, including our look at DSI Sportsbook, where you can sign up for that Bang 100 promo code, get a 100% deposit bonus over there at BetDSI, where it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. The first one, professional handicapper Brian Leonard from wagertalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Everything's going great. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you on today's show. Glad to have you on all of the Wednesday shows that we do here, Brian. And let's go ahead and dive right in with a look at the National Football League here. One game, Thursday night, Miami takes on Houston. We've talked about this angle a few times here throughout the season where, you know, when you've got a couple of teams that don't play in the same division, it's kind of an autoplay in some respects on the home team. But laying 7.5 here with Houston, no easy task this week.
Yeah, you're right. The only way I would look would be Houston, but that hook keeps me off the game. I made the line 8.5. What does have me interested is the teaser. It's a low, I believe it's a 44 total. So we've got a low-scoring game. We've got the advantage for the home team. Although Houston hasn't really looked good at home this year, they played the Giants, which we all know stinks. They lose that game outright. They played Dallas, who we're all pretty sure stinks. And they had to go to overtime to win that game. And then Buffalo, they only went by 7 there, and we all know how Buffalo is. So Houston's had a very easy home schedule, and they've kind of struggled with it. But from a mathematical standpoint, taking this 7.5 down to 1.5 for the 6-point teaser is the way to go. That's what I'll be doing in this contest. To me, the worst unit on the field is the Miami defense. Miami's defense is allowing 48.9 successful plays. Neither one of the offenses is overly impressive. One thing I have noticed is Houston in explosive plays earlier this year, first four games, 7, 11, 9, and 8. And then the last three games, 2, 4, and 3. Sure, Dallas, Buffalo, and Jacksonville, their best units are their defenses. But still, the Texans have been having a hard time with explosive plays offensively as of late, whereas you take a look at Miami, their defense, the last four games, they did do very well against Cincinnati. They only allowed 2 explosive plays in that game, but they still lost by 10. But New England had 10 against them, Chicago had 9, and Detroit had 11 last week. So if there was any thoughts of Houston having a big day offensively, this would be the team to turn it around against this defense compared to the ones that they've just played. We've talked about the short week favoring the home team in non-divisional games. The reason we do that is because they don't know as much about this team. You play a divisional opponent twice a year. So it's 7.5. The hook is keeping me off the Houston side, and I only made it 8.5 anyway. But I think this is a really nice teaser play here on the Houston Texans.
And you look at Miami here so far in the season, allowing almost 46% of opponents' third down conversions. That's the fifth worst mark, I guess I should say, in the NFL here for this season. So Miami defense, you know, again, overall they've had some problems, 6.2 yards allowed per play, but they're also not getting off the field enough. And when you consider that now they go from Ryan Tannehill to Brock Osweiler, you kind of wonder a little bit there about their offense. However, that being said, Ryan Tannehill, in his five starts, 65.9% completion percentage, 8-5 touchdown interception ratio. Osweiler, 67.5% in his two starts and then one game in relief, 6-2 touchdown interception ratio. So, Brian, I have to ask you this. I know you do a lot with successful plays, explosive plays, and plus-minus sacks. Tannehill and Osweiler, two different guys. Tannehill, a lot more mobile. Osweiler, kind of statuesque back there. He's taken four sacks in his dropbacks. Tannehill had 11 in his. When you get a quarterback change like that, how do you account for that in terms of the statistics that you do like to use?
Well, you definitely have to pay attention to it. As you mentioned, in the one game with Osweiler, four sacks and then the entire season, Miami's done very good. In fact, the week before against Chicago, which is a team that we all think about as having a very good defense, especially with Mac there, Miami wasn't sacked at all in that game. So that's something you always got to keep in mind. And we talk about how much a quarterback is worth. It all depends on how good his backup is. And so the backup isn't very good, but then again, Tannehill isn't very good. So the drop-off at quarterback here isn't as much as you would get as if it was like Drew Brees or Tom Brady or something that like. So people say, okay, Tannehill's out, and they would just assume that would be a sizable drop-off. But as much as we'd like to pick on Osweiler and his lack of success in the past, is Tannehill really a guy that we can actually say is a big difference maker for Miami? I don't think so. I think Miami's going to end up drafting a quarterback next year anyway. So it's not as much of a drop-off. And, Houston is a team that some days quarterbacking, they've allowed seven sacks to Indy and seven to Buffalo. But for the most part, they've been, one, two, three. So their quarterbacking, to be honest with you, if they didn't have a mobile quarterback in Watson, Houston would be in a lot tougher shape. So they've already played a couple teams that really took it to him, and he's under duress a lot. But I don't think this Miami defense is the kind of defense that can do that kind of thing. So we'll have to see. You take a look at Miami on the season, they've only had more than three sacks once, and that was against the Jets. They had four. So it should be a pretty good game for Houston to put some points on the board here. And like I said, the teaser is the way I'm going to go in this one.
And that was just the second career start for Sam Darnold and not a short game, that game where Miami did get a little bit rushed. So you got to keep that in mind. One other thing I'll mention about this game, then we'll move on from it. Houston, 31st in the NFL in red zone scoring percentage in terms of touchdowns only. They're at 37.93%. So again, you kind of look for outliers here at this time of the year. You would think that Houston, especially with all the talent they have with a guy like Deshaun Watson, they'd be a little bit more potent in the red zone. That kind of speaks to a coaching issue, in my opinion. It's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why Bill O'Brien, certainly on the hot seat here, that, he's just really not getting it done with this team that has a lot of talent, even though, yes, they are on the plus side in point differential, and they are 4-3 after that 1-3 start. Brian, let's go over to Sunday here, and a game that you and I are, of course, very, very familiar with. Cleveland takes on Pittsburgh. The Browns, number 253 on the rotation order. Pittsburgh, 254. So this one's right there at the top of the board after the London game. And look, I mean, it's the state of the Browns. It is what it is. But anytime these other three AFC teams play each other, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and Baltimore, the line is basically three on the favorite, whoever that's going to be. A lot of times in that Baltimore-Pittsburgh game, it's three on the home team. This one is eight. So Cleveland, while they are a better team so far this season, as we see out here in the betting market, still not really getting a ton of respect from the odds makers.
Yeah, coming into the season, there was a lot of talk with the rookies that the Browns had, and then obviously being on Hard Knocks, a lot of people were believing in the Browns, and it was something that I had said originally, that they had eight-win talent with two-win coaching staff, and the coaching staff continues to find ways to screw this up, and it's something that there's been a lot of talk this week, and as well as anybody living in Cleveland, about some things being done at the coaching staff. It's been a little bit disappointing as a Browns fan that they do have some talent, but they cannot put it together. But when I take a look at this game, you know, obviously Pittsburgh, even though it wasn't a loss, it was a tie in that game to start the season 21-21 and one of Cleveland's four overtime games. And how much could you have won a bet sitting talking with somebody and saying the Browns are going to have four overtime games before the season's even halfway over? You've got some pretty good odds for that because there's not too many games that go to overtime in the NFL, roughly about one a week. So, but my line on this game, I have Pittsburgh as a much bigger favorite than what it is. And when you take a look at the lack of success the Cleveland's had, because take a look, in reality, they scored 21, 18, 21, 42 against Oakland, and we've all seen what Oakland has done since then. 9, 14, and 23. That's been their regulation points for the Cleveland Browns. But when you take a look at the turnovers, they're up 10, 13. They're up 10, plus 10 in turnovers on the season at this point, and that's all the points that they've been scoring. Tells you how poor this Cleveland offense has done. Early down success rate has not been very good. You take a look at their success rate on offense, successful plays. They're only at 40.0, which is basically one of the worst in the league, if not the worst. Cleveland's just not having a lot of success offensively. The Steelers' defense is getting a little bit better, a little bit healthier as the season goes on. They're still not one of the better teams defensively, but Cleveland right now is a team that is really having a problem moving the ball. And when you can't even put points on the board with a plus 10 turnover margin at this point in the season, you've got some real problems. And we talked about Baker Mayfield a couple of weeks ago, and I had told you that it seems like to me the Browns are just trying to keep him healthy as opposed to winning these football games. And so they won't let him run. He's afraid to pass because we saw so with Kaiser last year. Kaiser forced a lot of passes, and he looked terrible, and he lost all of his confidence, and the Browns don't want that. So they're caught between a rock and a hard place offensively, and the Steelers are a team that is starting to put it together, playing a little bit better ball. I like the Steelers here. It'll probably be on my card for the week. The line's currently at 8. I don't think we'll ever see 7 again. But to me, this is a tough week in the NFL. Last week was tough also. I only had one play for my clients in last week's NFL card. But I'll be on Pittsburgh here. And as long as the game doesn't go to overtime, because if it does go to overtime again, it's no way I win that one. But it's more of a play against Cleveland in that offense right now than anything.
Well, and this one also sets up as a little bit of a teaser play as well. Total 50 or 50 and a half, so it's a little bit higher than you'd like to go with here. But as you mentioned, the Browns, I mean, they've been gifted a lot of opportunities here with the 20 on the negative side. Here they're doing very well on the positive side. And, yeah, they've been in every game, gone to overtime in four of them. But as you mentioned, Brian, not really a whole lot of success with those takeaways that they've had. It's also a Browns team here. And, again, four overtime periods does have an impact on this. They have the most third down attempts here in the NFL this season, 112, but they're 29th in third down conversion rate. So they've not had success in the early downs, as you mentioned, and they haven't had success on the money down either to sustain drives, keep the offense out there. Really, honestly, when you look at Browns this season, the success they've had has been from special teams because Britton Colquitt having a Pro Bowl season. He's been absolutely terrific. They've been able to flip field position a lot because of his punting prowess and because of the plus turnover margin, and they still haven't done a whole lot with it. So I agree that this is kind of setting up where the Browns are going to get blown out again here by somebody sometime soon. In the first half, it looked like it'd be Tampa Bay. If Quan Alexander doesn't go down at the time that he did right before halftime, maybe Tampa Bay does run away and hide this game. But it was pretty clear that, you know, the defense kind of lost it a little bit when Alexander went out. And then, of course, it was a struggle for them to win that game. So I think the Browns, you know, they've gotten fortunate in so many ways. They've gotten unlucky from the officiating crews throughout the season. This could be a team that could very well be 4-2-1 as opposed to 2-4-1 and be a team that everyone's looking for regression from. Instead, people just kind of look at them and they sort of overlook the regression signs that are there right now.
Yeah, you talked about this being a teaser. I don't tease totals that high because there's more variance, but going back to the sacks, the Browns the last 3 weeks have been sacked 5 times. They're really having struggles keeping the quarterback upright, and the Steelers are a team that can really put some pressure on the quarterback. And yeah, what started to look like a very positive season for the Cleveland Browns is quickly going back to what we've seen out of the Browns for the last decade or so. And the good news is the coaching staff will likely not be back next year, and that's a good thing. And we talked about that earlier in the season, where we thought the Browns would be a more talented team. But if they had success, the coaching staff would stay. I don't think we have to worry about that at this point. I think the Browns are going to clean house with the entire coaching staff next year. And then finally, we've got a chance to get to the point where, maybe we can get some coaches in there. And, in fact, I heard a rumor, and who knows with these rumors, but Belichick started off coaching the Browns before he went to New England. And now with all the trouble that New England with the coaching staff and Brady and the whole bit, there's talk that maybe the coach at New England at this point, he's proved everything he can with this team. Maybe he wants a new challenge. I wouldn't mind having him back as the coach of the Browns next year.
I still think Lincoln Riley is the guy. I still think that that's the guy they're going to go with, because you've got to get creative offensively in the NFL now. You know, you get the teams that are having a lot of success. Kansas City with Pat Mahomes, and you know, that was a move that a lot of people kind of questioned for Andy Reid and that franchise, but they get the dude with the big arm. They let him throw it up in the air and let Tyreek Hill run under it. I think you go that RPO type of route with Lincoln Riley. He knows Baker Mayfield. That's kind of the dream fit that I have for the Browns, but you'll have to see what they do ultimately decide to do here going into the 2019 season. Let's transition over to the college football side of things here, Brian. And, you know, Thursday night games are nothing new. We've got a lot of them on a regular basis. We actually have 5 of them here this week. Also 5 Friday night games. So a lot more weeknight games coming up here, but also Maction. That starts next week on Tuesday night. We obviously won't have you on the show till Wednesday. So with that in mind here, Brian, you got a couple of Thursday night games that we're going to touch on. Then we'll hit a Saturday game as well. How does your handicap change, or does it change, with these Maction weeknight games?
Doesn't really change much, because the team knows getting into the season this is the time they get to play on national TV. The only thing that would change is looking at the game before they play on national TV. That is something that they might do a little bit of a lesser motivation in those games. But once they get into this run where they're on TV every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, that kind of thing, I think it's just routine. It's nice that the MAC gets some recognition here. Most of the other teams did not want to do anything like this. This is the only time you can see like the Sun Belt or the MAC on national TV. But you got to do what you got to do. And sure, they'd like to have this full weeks to handicap, but or full weeks to prepare their teams. But then they're going to be ignored on the Saturday card to all the bigger schools. So this is something that works out very well for the MAC. And I know a lot of people out here in Vegas like to bet what's on TV. So we can really take advantage of that, because they don't know a thing these teams have done all season long. Now all of a sudden they get on national TV. They look great one day, and that's going to be in their memories. We could take advantage of that for the next few weeks.
Well, as we look at next Tuesday here, Kent State, Bowling Green, Miami of Ohio, and Buffalo, and then Wednesday, Ball State and Toledo. Both Ball State and Toledo play on Thursday this week, so it will be a little bit of a short week, quicker turnaround for them. Obviously, the 4 teams that play on Tuesday are not going to be in action here late in the week this week. But, Brian, as we look at the Thursday night slate here for the Mid-American Conference, we'll start with game 105-106. Toledo takes on Western Michigan. And we saw some very interesting line movement in that Toledo game last week, where they opened a favorite, market came in on Buffalo. But then as we got to game day, we saw some Toledo money hit the board. They closed a 3-point favorite and then lost by 2 touchdowns at home. So now a quick turnaround to play Western Michigan with this line going up from 4 to anywhere from 6 to 7 out there in the market, but mostly 6.5.
Yeah, this was a game last week that we talked about. And I was sleeping, I missed out on giving the play to my clients early. They still got the play. I still played Buffalo -1. And then all of a sudden, as you mentioned, all this money is coming in on Toledo. Toledo decided to make a quarterback change, and everybody thought that was going to be a big deal. And so they went that way, and Toledo got off to a nice start in the game, because obviously Buffalo wasn't prepared for that quarterback. But as the game went on, the better team wore them down. That was That was the Buffalo Bulls. And this Toledo team right now, they've only covered the one game all season long against Nevada. They win that game 63-44. But when you take a look at the successful plays, they were outplayed in that game. They were plus turnovers. So Toledo, really, this is the worst Toledo team I can remember in a really long time. I've already given this play out to my clients. I give out Western Michigan -5.5 earlier. It's a 6.5 now. It's still good up to 7. Anything more than 7, I wouldn't play it. And we're getting some sharp places right now. Bookmakers at 6.5 -115. So if you get a chance to play this game, play it now before it gets to 7. And don't lay more than 7 if it gets to that point. But I have Western as a pretty good size favorite here. Western's a team that's peaking at the right time. They've won five straight games, four of those five being on the road, which is really impressive. That'd probably be the only drawback here for Western, as they play Saturday on the road in their fourth road game in 5 weeks, and now turn around and play a short week here against Toledo. That's the only thing I could see to be a negative here for Western Michigan, is this team has really offensively picked it up the last, you know, half of the season. They've looked a lot better, and the defense has been much better for Central Michigan the last 2 weeks. And granted, they play Bowling Green at Central Michigan, but the defense has looked really good there. And this Toledo team offensively, against Buffalo last week, they only had 24% of their plays greatly successful offensively. That's not going to get it done. Buffalo is a very good team, but 24% is a real concern. And, you know, their high on the season was 48% against Bowling Green. We all know Bowling Green is one of the worst defensive teams in college football, and they didn't cover that game either. So Toledo's to go against right now. Western's a plus team, and the bookmakers coming out with that line earlier in the week, it opened at 5 and 5.5. They're seeing all one side of money here, and I think it's right as long as we're not laying over 7 in this contest.
And again, one of the reasons why box score study is so important, Buffalo, you can say, well, they only won 31-17 last week. Look at the box score, 32-8. First down edge for Buffalo, 463-295 in yardage. And also the Buffalo offense had the ball for almost 40 minutes in that game. So now this Toledo defense, which is getting exposed a little bit here this year because the offense isn't as good. If you've got a good offense, you can hide a marginal to bad defense. Toledo did have a pretty good defense here in recent years, but you know, now this is where a defense can really get lit up when your offense can't hold up its end of the bargain. They play 40 minutes, basically, in that game on Saturday. Now turn around and play Thursday on the road against an improving team. I agree with you. This is a line move that I'm certainly in agreement with, although my number was 5.5. And here's something I want to touch on real quickly here. One of the things that I have a hard time with in terms of updating my power ratings throughout the season is that Toledo is a program that has built up a lot of trust. They've been very, very good for a very long time. So I find that it's difficult for me to make significant adjustments, even if they're warranted, when teams are playing badly, because you kind of expect that, you know, they've been good for a long time. So they should get things kind of squared away. Maybe with Toledo, I do need to be a little bit more aggressive in moving them down.
Yeah, it's something that not only you have a problem with, but the lines makers as well. When you have a team that's been consistently good, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're not the same team. I like to talk about line play, sacks for and against. Toledo on the season, minus 10 in sacks. Western Michigan, plus 12 in sacks. So Western will have the edge at the point of impact here. And Toledo just doesn't have the athletes, doesn't have the players they've had in the past. I'll be interested to see what happens after the season to find out why this team has folded like they have in Toledo. And you always – could count on the Rockets having an explosive offense, scoring 36 or more, 36, 38, 35, 36 points the last 4 years. This year, they're still scoring points against Nevada and Bowling Green, but when they play decent, average to decent defenses, they've really struggled. And we saw that earlier, starting with Miami to start the season when they played. That was their first FBS game. So they played a lot of tough defenses, but the offense has not shown up in those games, and Western's defense is pretty good. So we'll play Western here, and I think we get another solid winner out of this.
We'll move down one spot on the board here, game 107-108, Ball State and Ohio. And I got to say, Brian, I mean, this one's right on my line. My number was 11 for this game. So the line makes sense. And I mean, obviously I have this game rated about where it should be, but it's also kind of tough with the body of work for the Bobcats this year to wrap my head around trying to take them as a double digit favorite.
Yeah, I only made this line 8, so I've been against Ohio. They're the team that was expected to run away with this division. They haven't played as well. You know, 2 weeks ago they played Northern Illinois. Only 29% of their plays were successful. But you wrap that around the previous 3 weeks. And granted, they played Massachusetts and Kent State and Bowling Green. But the offense against weak opponents, weak defenses, has done very well. So then you have to decide, what is Ball State? Ball State on the season, 46.8% of the plays against them have been successful, so that's not very good. Not terrible. In the MAC, you'll find a lot of those teams that aren't very good defensively. But, you know, this is a team in Ball State. The offense is a little bit underwhelming. They take a look at early down success rate. They haven't been very good. In order to beat Ohio, you either have to have an elite defense, a good defense, or you've got to be able to put points on the board, and this offense hasn't really done it. Only once all season have they scored more than 24 points in a game. I somewhat lean with Ball State here. It's not going to be on my card, but this is a team I don't want to go. I don't want to play on Ball State, but I have no problem playing against Ohio. But the line's just not as high as what I wanted. We're looking at 10.5. There are a few 11s out there. But it's not going to be on my card. There's just not enough that I've seen out of Ball State to trust them in the dog roll, even though I'd like to go against Ohio here.
And Ball State's been a weird team for me. I mean, I had them against Notre Dame. In fact, we had them in the Golden Nugget against Notre Dame. And I watched a lot of that game because I was on them. And they played exceptionally well. And obviously it was before Notre Dame made the change to Ian Book. They still had Brandon Wimbush. It's kind of a throwaway game for the Fighting Irish, and they played like it. 2 weeks later, I came back on Ball State in the Nugget against Western Kentucky. They were awful in that game. Last week, one of my biggest overlays was I had Eastern Michigan as a 9-point favorite in that game against Ball State. Eastern Michigan blows them out. My line was way off, so I still had to make an adjustment there to the Cardinals. But, you know, the Cardinals were a team that you and I were both high on coming into the season. In some respects, they've kind of met that. In other respects, they haven't. You know, you play tough against Notre Dame, hung around in that game for a while against Indiana, lose a winnable game at home to Western Kentucky, get blown out at home by Eastern last week, a team that doesn't blow anybody out. I just don't know what to do with Ball State right now. And when you get 9 weeks into the season and you're not sure what to do with a team, you know, even if you've got maybe power ratings value or you've got something you feel like is a strong edge, you certainly want to be careful with that.
Yeah, one of the things I look at when I'm finalizing my plays is how a team has done against the spread. The reason I do that is because, are they beating expectations or are they losing their expectations? Ball State 3-4 against the spread in FBS games. That Notre Dame game, even though they covered that game and it was never in doubt, keep in mind the Irish played Michigan the week before. That was what they'd worked on all off season. They were not working on Ball State in game two. And obviously it was a big brother, little brother type of game. Ball State that wanted that game. That was an important game for them. They played Central Connecticut State on a Thursday before that. So that was the game that they'd wanted. Notre Dame was like sleepwalking. And I believe we had Ball State that week for our clients. So when you're going back and you're looking at these things, even though Ball State covered that game, there were some circumstances around that that I really wouldn't count that as a win against the spread. So, the game you talk about with Western Kentucky, yeah, that game was a -3 and they lose that game outright. They were outplayed in just about everything in that game. So there was no turnover disadvantage or anything. They played even turnovers. So that was a game that was pretty telling for Ball State in that contest. And they haven't really picked it up. They did look good against Kent State the following week within that game, 52-24. They had the turnover edge. Still, when you look at their successful plays, they gave up more successful plays than they had themselves. So, Ball State has been a team that has not been what we thought. We thought they'd have a lot of more depth this year, and they have. But they really have not been a team that you can trust to back on a week-to-week basis.
All right, let's take a look at one more game here. And this is again, I mean, this is probably going to be a throwaway game for a lot of people, but this is a fascinating handicap game. 141-142, Army and Eastern Michigan. Had Army last week in the Golden Nugget. It was our only loser out of four college plays that we had there. Figured Miami of Ohio wouldn't be too invested in that game, trying to figure out how to defend the option when they had Buffalo on deck. But the Redhawks played very, very well in that spot. Army now on the road to take on Eastern, their first road game since they blew out Buffalo. Didn't have to leave the state for that one. Now they go to Ypsilanti, Michigan, a little bit of a longer trip, and they play Air Force next week, one of the legs of the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy series. They'll get Navy at the end of the year, obviously. For Eastern Michigan, though, now you've got to play the option off of back-to-back conference wins. You haven't had a week off. This is a really interesting handicap both ways.
It definitely is. From a point spread perspective, I think there's value on Army. But as you pointed out, they do have Air Force on deck, and I'll have to go back and see how they do the week before playing one of their brethren. So, but, yeah, this game for Eastern Michigan, and in when I'm handicapping the NBA, I try, and I know that you put out something on Bang the Book where you take a look at the schedules coming up, and that's something I've had a lot of success with in the NBA, is trying to decide on which game a team is going to give their full effort in. And in the NBA, really, to me, that's the way to handicap the NBA anymore, is try to pick your spots, which games that they're going to come out and play. Because as we've seen with the Golden State Warriors, they can come out and win any game, but it's which games are they going to come out and give the full effort and try to cover the spread. That's something I always take a look at in the NBA. And from the Eastern Michigan standpoint, as you mentioned, they haven't had a week off yet. They just go to Ball State. They played Buffalo, we'll go all the way back to the first FBS game, Purdue, Buffalo, San Diego State, Northern Illinois, Western Michigan, and then Toledo, which is a team that's normally very good. And then last week they go down to Ball State and they win that game by 22 points, plus one turnover. So they did outplay them in the game, so that was a legitimate win. But now they're playing Army with Central Michigan and Akron on deck. Sure, they're lesser teams. They finished the season Central, Akron, and Kent State. So they've already finished their toughest part of the schedule. But how are they going to get all this work done against Army in this short week? To me, Eastern Michigan plays with heart more than any team I remember in the MAC. And it's sort of like they play similar to Northern Illinois, the way they played in the past. Solid offense, very good defense. And Eastern's one of those teams. They continue to surprise me. They've done very well. But how could you not think this is one of those weeks where it's going to be tough for them to prepare for Army? I haven't released this to my clients yet. I'm going to do a little bit more research, but Army would be the only way I would take a look at this. Army, but you have to take it from a different perspective from the Army side, because Air Force isn't particularly good this year. Navy's way down from where they've been in the past. The best military school this year is Army. So they're expecting to go in there and win the Commander-in-Chief Trophy this year. So will that keep them away from preparing for Eastern Michigan? Keep in mind, these are soldiers. These are guys that for their mentality are known to just push these things away. So you would trust them to come out and play a good game. At this point, I am. I'll go back and research how they've done before playing their military schools. But from a strict handicapping standpoint, I just can't see backing Eastern Michigan, especially as a favorite in this contest.
Yeah, and this is one that, I mean, this is going to have a running clock throughout. You look at Eastern Michigan and their play distribution. They run the football a ton. We know Army runs the football a ton. A little bit surprised to see this total up there at 48. But, again, you know, you've got an option here. Eastern Michigan doesn't see it a ton. Army very good at running it. So that'll be a pretty interesting totals, a couple of angles you can look at for the total as well here for this game. Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What do you guys got going on over there right now, Brian?
Actually, it's going to be a fun day. We all know that Kelly Vegas, Kelly Stewart, is a host and she does a lot of things with me. Well, good for Kelly, because Showtime has gotten a look at her and they're going to follow us around today. They're going to tape the videos. We're going to go do the videos today. Showtime will be there talking, you know, basically checking out the videos. And then usually afterwards we go out and have lunch and we talk about the games, and they're going to follow us out to one of the local restaurants, and we'll sit around. And they'll be interested to have a professional crew follow us around. And hey, hopefully we'll all make the cut, and this show on Showtime will air, and it'll be something that I could show my non-grandkids, because I don't have any kids of my own, but hopefully some of my nieces and nephews in the future. And it'll be an interesting day, so I'm kind of looking forward to it. Of course, if you've been in the handicapping industry for as long as I have, you've had a lot of these movies and TV shows that you've taped, and most of the time they don't get picked up, and a lot of times your segments are cut. But it's always nice when somebody gives you a little bit of attention, and my hat's off to Johnny and Marco and the Prez over there at Wager Talk. They've done a great deal and a great deal of work, and we're still waiting for you to come into town so we can put you on some videos. And we've been having a nice partnership with your company and our company over the years, having Rolf and Brandon, who's not with us, but he's a friend of ours, and myself on the show. So, hey, maybe we'll get some Bang the Book people to join us on this Showtime show someday.
Well, certainly hoping for it and looking forward to it. Brian Leonard, WagerTalk.com, at BLeonardSports on Twitter. Appreciate it, Brian. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks. Best of luck to everyone.
Good stuff there with professional handicapper Brian Leonard, again, over at WagerTalk.com. We got one more guest and one more segment left for this Wednesday edition of the show. That is with Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hi, Adam. Doing okay. How about yourself?
Doing very well, bud. Appreciate your time, as always, here. And I wanted to start with a look at the NBA. And I know that you're a derivative guy. You're a high-volume guy. This totals market in the NBA feels like it's out of control.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it is very hard to take unders. I mean, I've tried to step in front of it a couple times, and it hasn't worked out well. It's just and then you have some teams that, usually have a few teams that are over teams that play high total games, but you're having teams that, I mean, you wouldn't think would be up-tempo teams or real juggernauts on offense with these high totals. I mean, you're looking at Dallas and Atlanta tonight up to 234.5, 235 at a couple places already. Memphis is in a game with a total of 219, which is very high for Memphis. And, I mean, you look at a couple of these games, you would expect Washington Golden State would probably be a little bit higher total, and it is at 235, but I mean, some of these, I think the lowest total on the board is 211 tonight with Spurs and with San Antonio. That's actually one of the few that have gone down from the opening number. Yeah, I mean, it's just really hard to do. And I think, until maybe the numbers adjust, and I'm sure the odds makers are trying to adjust, but they can't adjust fast enough with these totals. So, I mean, I've been playing a lot less of them to start the season, for sure.
Well, and you look at the game like Philadelphia-Detroit last night. I mean, that's a total that came down from 219 to 214.5. Yes, it went to overtime, but there were 240 points in that game at the end of regulation. So, you know, it's always funny for me to look at, you know, what happens with results relative to movement. Not funny, I guess maybe that's not the word, but always interesting to look at, where, you know, these totals are set high, and you get a total that does look high, like that one in Philadelphia and Detroit last night, and then it blows through the total completely. And you look at the Clippers in New Orleans. You know, New Orleans had played some very high-scoring affairs, but a lot of that had to do with the competition that they played. You know, they played a team like Houston. You know, you're going to score points against Houston. That's a total that goes from 235.5 at Pinnacle up to 238, starts to come back down, never even came close to going over. So I'm not going to say that it's a guessing game, but as you look around right now with some of the recency bias and some of the small sample sizes that are out there, it does feel like there's value to be had. But as you said, it's a pretty high variance environment right now, where determining what value is and where it's actually present is only half the battle.
Yeah, in terms of totals, it almost makes you want to wait at least a couple more
weeks, you know, once these teams get 10 or 12 so games under their belt, then you can maybe get a little bit more realistic assessment. Because, I mean, they always say that the NFL, whenever you see analysts on television, you know, oh, it's a copycat league. Well, the NBA is becoming a copycat league. I mean, you have more teams that want to play a more open style, that want to play like the Warriors. You know, very few teams are zigging when the other teams are zagging. I mean, you looked at, now they had a really low one the other night with Memphis and Utah, but you look at a couple of the Utah totals this year. They have decided that they were going to play a little bit more up-tempo. I mean, obviously New Orleans is, and their games are going over, even though they didn't last night. But, I mean, you still got to figure out, I think, these teams' identity. And you still, you know, and that takes a little bit of time. Eventually, I think a lot of these teams will settle in and you'll kind of know, at least by and large, who and what they are over time. But it's so early that you don't really know that yet.
Well, and I think one of the hard things here, too, and I wrote a detailed preview for tonight's Dallas and Atlanta game, is those two teams getting some ESPN love here tonight, mostly because of their market sizes, not because of the caliber of the team. You know, Dallas, and I didn't realize this until I actually just looked right now. Dallas coming from three-point range at 38.2%. That was well behind the Rockets, who were number one, over 50%. Brooklyn at 41%. You look at Dallas this year, almost 47% of their field goal attempts coming from distance. Atlanta, I figured they would slow the tempo down, be more of a defensive-minded team under new head coach Lloyd Pierce. They really haven't. In fact, they've sped up the tempo, and they're chucking a bunch of threes as well. And the problem is, that total has to be set high, because you look at the expectation of points between the tempos for both teams and the percentage of three-point shooting that they've got here so far. But also, it's early in the season. Dallas is on the road in Atlanta, the only game that they're going to play at Phillips Arena. Atlanta's playing its home opener tonight, so a different shooting backdrop for them as well. You know, you have to kind of walk this fine line between the stats are telling you to expect points because of the tempo and because of the percentage of field goal attempts coming from distance. But also, you've got a different shooting backdrop here for these two teams tonight. Atlanta in that home opener. So the total moves up, and it should, because from a mathematical standpoint, you should expect points. But there are some of these situational or maybe even technical angles in play here where, you know, you're taking a lot of threes, and that's great, and there's a high percentage chance of you know, a lot of points. But also, what if both of these teams shoot 28% from three? The total moved up because it should, and it may come nowhere close because the teams don't shoot well. So it's a very fine line to walk early season in the NBA.
Yeah, you're seeing a real clash, I guess, right now between the stats and the metrics versus I guess, the fundamentals. You know, your fundamental and your spot type of handicapping, and that's kind of what you're seeing, I think, early on this year in the NBA. And the market really has yet to decide. I mean, the market kind of is the ultimate decider when you have that clash between those two factions. And, you know, the market, I think, is still pretty unsure. So that's just something that you're honestly going to have to give time.
I mean, we're seeing totals moves that look like college basketball types of totals moves early on in the season, which is something I really can't remember an NBA season getting off to a start like that. But what about the sides market, Wes? I mean, is there anything you've picked up there? I mean, it does seem like the totals market, very inefficient, very high variance at this point in time. You'd figure the sides would be a little bit more efficient, a little bit sharper. We'd have a little bit better of an idea of what we're working with. So is there anything you've picked up on here in the early season from a side standpoint, whether full game or derivative, that you've been able to use to your advantage?
Well, I mean, I'm still trying to figure it out myself. And, I mean, there are still fundamental, you know, scheduling dynamics and sides that come into play, and you get some favorites maybe that get a little bit overvalued, and some of these teams that are expected to be bad, you know, early in the season will come out and play hard. I mean, you know, they obviously –
you know, knowing probably realistically what they are, haven't necessarily packed it in. So, I mean, you'll get some bad teams like a Sacramento or someone of that nature that will cover some of these games. I mean, and you're just seeing a lot of erratic stuff. So maybe kind of going back and forth and zigging and zagging. I mean, we saw Philadelphia absolutely blow out Chicago, and then they go and then they're life and death the next game to against Orlando. They get out to a good lead, and then Orlando comes back and they only lose by one. So, I mean, I wish I had something, I guess, more quantifiable this early. But, you know, it's just tough to find that out. I mean, there's a couple teams that have started out really well. I mean, New Orleans looks like they're going to be a little bit better than projected. And, you know, they're firing on all cylinders right now. But we've seen Anthony Davis get injured, and they're an Anthony Davis injury away from being very, very ordinary. So, and I mean, you have a, you know, some of your premium teams, I think, will, I don't want to say take nights off, but, you know, Golden State, maybe not, Britain maybe won't bring it every night. I mean, they did lose at Denver. They really should have lost at Utah last Friday night and were able to pull out that Jarebko tip-in to win at Utah. So, I mean, some of these teams aren't going to bring it every night. We've seen Boston a little bit, kind of back and forth. They lost at home to Orlando the other night because, you know, one of the things we didn't realize, you know, or you realize, but you just kind of put it out of your mind, is that this team really didn't play together a lot the last year. I mean, they played an entirely different lineup without Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving. So, I mean, it's going to take time for a team like Boston to get used to each other, and we see that Toronto already beat them. I mean, Toronto is a team, they're 4-0, that has kind of come firing all cylinders early, but the bulk of their team played together, with the exception of basically trading Kawhi for DeMar DeRozan. But Boston has to get used to each other, and Philadelphia still is very young. They have to get used to playing with one another and dealing with injuries. They were without Ben Simmons last night, and actually I thought, even though they didn't cover, that was a pretty good effort. Get at least at the very minimum a slightly improved Detroit team.
Yeah, there's such a feeling out process to say the least. And the last thing I'll ask about here, because I want to make sure we got some time for golf since that event starts tonight. You're a high volume guy. You're doing all the markets, you know, and I'm sure you're getting your college basketball preparations in order a little bit here as well. So, you know, when you have this, I don't want to say persona, but when your bankroll is predicated on being a high volume type of guy, having a lot of investment, there's not a whole lot of downtime because you're always studying the entire card, always looking for those plays because you try to take a lot of smaller edges to create bigger profits over the course of a given night or over a given week. Other people will take bigger edges with a smaller volume. So, you know, it's just the style that works for you. If you are taking it light in the NBA right now, and it sounds like you certainly are, how tough is it for you to follow along with everything that's going on when, you know, you don't have action on it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just, you know, trying to watch as many games as you can and trying to go over, you know, the different numbers and look and see if you can pick little things up. I mean, I don't think, you know, and I always say this, just taking even the betting out of it, just looking at the teams. Teams usually need 20 to 25 games, I think, before you really have a firm grasp on their identity. And, you know, that doesn't mean, okay, we got to wait to bet until 20 or 25 games in the season, but it's so hard, I think, to just, you know, draw conclusions into one game. And that's honestly one of the things that you have to do, I think, when you're playing this, is you have to, at least right now, kind of capitalize on these short-term overreactions and these recency biases if you can. And that's probably the best way to do that, at least early on in the NBA.
All right, let's transition over to the golf side here for the last 10 minutes of the show. Got to run right at noon here, so a little bit shorter of a show than usual, but The WGC HSBC Champions event here over in Shanghai, China, $10 million purse, extra FedEx Cup points on the line because this is a strong field. The first talking point I want to discuss is something I wanted to touch on with Brian Blessing yesterday, but we ran out of time. You've got the European Tour guys who have come over for this event. Now, this used to be only a European Tour and Asian Tour event up until, I believe, 2013 is when the PGA Tour started to get involved in this one. So a lot of European Tour guys have been coming here, have been playing this course, so on and so forth. But as we've discussed, and I think we touched on this a little bit last week, the European Tour guys are in the midst of the race to Dubai. They're playing very important events for them over there in terms of their playoffs, whereas the PGA Tour guys, you know, some of them didn't qualify for the Tour Championship, so they were done a little bit early. A lot of them didn't play in the Ryder Cup. So, you know, they haven't been playing these pressure-packed events here. Does that give some of the European Tour guys a little bit of an advantage with something like this?
I think so. I mean, and I think, you know, certain guys make their schedules independently. I mean, you're seeing a few high-profile players. You know, Justin Thomas played two straight weeks over there in Asia and is not playing a third week. Jordan Spieth's not over there. Ricky Fowler's not over there, but yet they're playing the event out in that TPC Summerlin here, actually, an improved field over what it usually is, because a wraparound event doesn't typically get a lot of stars unless you play like one random week where it's just, well, I don't want to be off for too long. I don't want to be off for 2 or 3 months. So, you know, I've got to play something. But I mean, I think, you know, the European Tour guys, I think, are right in the stretch. And, you know, some of them played the event in Dunhill Links because it's kind of like what the Pebble Beach event is over here. But you saw last week was kind of a weaker field in Spain for the Valderrama Masters. And because they had this event coming up and then they have the Dubai events. But, I mean, I think it's really more of the individual player. I mean, you're seeing a more heavy schedule at the end of the year for the European Tour guys than you do the PGA Tour guys. But, you know, I think it's really more about the individual player at this point and how he wants to approach. Some guys are going to, you know, take their downtime this time of year, especially if they're going from January to you know, going hard from January to September. I mean, some guys will play early in January in Hawaii, and some of the guys will play the Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Qatar Swing in late January. So it really all depends, I think.
We've got a strong field here. Dustin Johnson, who should have won this event last year, collapsed on Sunday. He's your favorite, plus 730. Brooks Koepka, last week's winner at the CJ Cup, plus 810. Justin Rose and Rory McIlroy, plus 1025. Grabbing these numbers from Five Dimes, again, make sure that you're shopping around for the best prices here. Hideki Matsuyama, plus 1500. He's a past winner of this event, I believe. But Jason Day, the first guy on your card here, in the 16 to 18 to 1 range, not really a guy that I had on my radar this week. What do you like about Day?
Well, what I like about him is he is now this is a course that's a little bit of a longer course. So, you know, you've seen a lot of bombers win here in the past. Dustin Johnson, Bubba Watson, you know, Phil. Now, this was about 10 years ago or so when Phil won. But guys that can hit it long. But you've seen ball strikers do well in this event. I mean, Bubba Watson, when he won in 2014, and won in a playoff over one of the shortest hitters in professional golf, Tim Clark. So, you know, ball striking and greens, you know, still matter here. And the number one guy on the PGA Tour, kind of an aggregate when you take the last 2 years, is Jason Day for strokes gained putting. You know, you still got to make putts here. And Jason Day is not a short hitter by any stretch of the imagination. And I think he's been so under the radar this year. I mean, this is a guy that did win two events this year at the Farmers Insurance Open and at Wells Fargo, but he's almost kind of been under the radar this year. It was almost kind of like a disappointing year because he didn't really contend in any of the majors. I mean, he made 3 or 4 cuts and had decent finishes in all of them, but he really wasn't in contention on Sunday in a major. And Day is always one of those players that capable of being as good as anybody in the world, but, you know, frequently has some kind of injuries or some kind of illness. I mean, he's basically always listed on the injury report from week to week. And, you know, it's like the Patriots where they always list Tom Brady as questionable. And I mean, that's what you look at with Jason Day. But I thought, you know, he fit here. You know, he's a little bit under the radar from you got three guys at the top with DJ, Brooks Koepka, now the new number one, and Justin Rose. There have been four guys that have been number one players in the world this year. So, I mean, there really, to me, is not a dominant player. There's certain guys that are really hot right now. And, you know, certainly Brooks has earned that number one ranking with two majors and then winning last week in South Korea, much to my chagrin, when Gary Woodland had 11 birdies in the final round and still couldn't, you know, wasn't able to pull through. But Day was somebody that I think maybe will get ignored a little bit at the top of the market. And I think he's a good play here. And I think you can expect him to be in contention in the final round.
Another guy you have listed here on your post over on Twitter, Rafael Cabrera-Bello, 33-1. Matthew Fitzpatrick at 50-1. He's a guy we've kind of been waiting for him to get that big win. He's down to 45-1 at some of the offshores. But we talked about Ian Poulter yesterday with Brian Blessing. I noticed you've got Ian Poulter on your card here this week as well.
Yeah, Poulter is a former winner of this event. Not at this course, though. He won it the year at they played it at Mission Hills instead of the Shoshone International Golf Club. But Poulter, Cabrera-Bello, and Fitzpatrick are basically guys I played that have had pretty good finishes and pretty good record in Asian events. And I would include Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Qatar as part of the Asian swing, as well with the China and the Hong Kong events. And these are guys that have played well over in Asia. I mean, Poulter loves to play over there. And it was just kind of going a little bit off of that. I think Matt Fitzpatrick looks like he's coming into form. He got that form kind of late for him to make the Ryder Cup team. But you know, it matters how he's playing now. And I think he's playing a lot better. Cabrera-Bello had a good year. It just wasn't a standout year and wasn't enough to make that team. But, you know, had a really good finish last week. Cabrera-Bello actually had the lowest final 36 holes by a shot over Koepka and Gary Woodland, who were the top two finishers, and a couple other guys. Shot 65-65 on the weekend at Nine Bridges last week. So that's a 130, 14 under par. So you got to like the way that he's playing and coming in. And even though he didn't win, I think that could give him confidence that can maybe spring him forward here.
One other guy on your list here is Xander Schauffele, who goes from 25 or 30 to 1 to 60 to 1 with the strength of this field, and a guy that has played very, very well when the lights are the brightest, as I mentioned in my preview. Wes, I do want to take a couple of minutes here real quickly, because there's a alternate event as well here, the Sanderson Farms Championship. And this is one of those where you've got a guy here who's the favorite in Sungjae Im, played very well in the Web.com Tour last year, played very well here on the Asian swing early on. But a guy like him at 18-1 is a relatively unproven type of player. Just kind of speaks to what you have in terms of potential profit possibilities for these alternate events. So what do you look for in these types of things? How do you handicap these?
Yeah, I mean, this is an event where I think, you know, it doesn't really hurt you necessarily to throw darts. And actually, you know, we can go through all the stats and all the course form and the recent form. You know, this event where you want to maybe throw some darts a little bit. I mean, if you look at the last several events here, in 2017, Ryan Armour won last year, 125-1. Cody Gribble the year before, 125-1. Peter Malnati, 250-1. Nick Taylor, 400-1. Woody Austin, 125-1. Scott Stallings, 100-1. That's going all the way back to 2012. And then you had Chris Kirk and Bill Haas, who were 30-1 and 22-1 respectively. But, you know, this isn't an event where I think you really get rewarded taking very many short prices. And, it's kind of something where you got to look maybe at a little bit of form. Maybe you look for some guys that are based in the South or have played, you know, a similar course to this where it's all Bermuda, the country club of Jackson in Mississippi. So, you know, that's kind of a little bit what I do, you know, finding guys that are a little bit higher priced. I think the shortest price guy I took was 45, and that was kind of going on a hunch with Hunter Mahan, who now has, you know, secured his card with a good finish on the WinTheWeb.com finals, who's kind of maybe brought his game back a little bit this year. I mean, we forget that the last two seasons, not including 2018, Mahan missed 32 of 54 cuts. And this was a guy that was at once the fourth-ranked player in the world and was the highest-ranked American in the world, you know, just a few years ago. And now his rank is currently in the high 300s, and it fell down to the 800s. So, you know, I went with a hunch there. A couple other 100-to-1 guys I liked, Ben Silverman, Tyler Duncan, Roberto Castro. Jonathan Randolph is an Ole Miss guy, so he's played this course a lot, and he's about 200-to-1. So, I mean, you know, you're really searching for value and maybe throwing some darts at this event.
Well, and you can find the other guys that Wes played over on his Twitter timeline at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, really appreciate your time here as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
No problem, Adam. Always a pleasure to be on.
Good stuff there with Wes Reynolds. Again, very interesting times here in the NBA as we try to break down that betting market. Then, of course, golf, lots of opportunities there. And like I said, I mean, I mentioned this before on the show, not everybody's cup of tea, but again, there are some good opportunities in matchups, in play wagering, and then, of course, with some outrights to make some money there in the golf betting market. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com will join me. We'll cram in as many college football games as we can for the Week 9 card. Then also Tony George from Doc Sports. We'll get some thoughts with him on the early part of the NBA season. Then also take a look at the NFL for Week 8, Westgate Super Contest Selection Segment Friday, and then Brent from DSI Sportsbook. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.